The TNT Shop has great gift ideas for your furry family member at TNTRadio.live. Perspective with Jesse Zurawell on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome to Perspective. I'm Jesse Zurawell, your host for the hour. Joining me today is my TNT colleague and good friend, Rick Munn. Rick is the host of Locked and Loaded, which you can tune into each weekday from 11 a.m. to noon London time, 6 a.m. to 7 a.m. New York time, and 8 p.m. to 9 p.m. Brisbane time. The hour before that, he takes calls along with Natalie Cheel. So do call in if you're so inclined and chat it up with the two of them. Rick, welcome back to Perspective. How are you, my friend?
I'm not too good. No, let me rephrase that. I'm not too bad. You sound a little bit throaty, if you don't mind me saying. So are you having any throat problems this week?
No, it's just one of those days. I don't know what it is about where I live, but it seems like the house I live in is always affecting my something in my body somehow.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of crap with regard to 5G and smart meters around here that I don't think help. And I'm not sure how up to par or even up to date this house is with regard to mold and things like that. Not that anybody I live with is dirty or lets things go, but my landlord isn't always on top of things. So,
okay. Well, either way, we'll try and get you over the line here today. How's that? I'll be walking shoulder to shoulder with you until the top of the hour. How does that sound?
That sounds great. Maybe you can throw me a virtual lozenge.
I will. One has just arrived virtually. Feel free to consume it at your leisure.
Thank you. Thank you. All right. So plenty to talk about as always. Banking has been big for the past almost 3 weeks now, I believe it is, since SVB went down. And then Signature went down, Silvergate went down, Credit Suisse essentially went down before UBS picked it up. HSBC picked up picked up SVB's subsidiary in the UK. Deutsche Bank is in dire straits. I spoke with Ian Davis and Fabio Vigi, both of whom you know well, about this. And we three were in agreement that what's happening in the banking system now is global and is almost certain to get worse. But what's your assessment of what's happened and what is likely to happen?
Well, I had a chat today myself with a chap called Nick Corbishley. Nick does a lot of analysis on this sort of business as well. He's based in Spain, actually. And we were having a rundown, much as you've just done, naming some of the, how would you say, the casualties in the banking trouble that's been going on over the last few weeks. So SVB really set the ball rolling. Then it spread. Those other banks you mentioned as well, Signature, came across Europe-wise. Credit Suisse has always been a little bit of a, well, not a little bit, a huge question mark over it. They were subsumed by UBS, fortunately for them. The next one that's on the hit list is Deutsche Bank, the huge German bank. And as Nick was pointing out today, this could be very important, Deutsche Bank, because there are no other German banks that could take Deutsche Bank on or buy them out the way that UBS did with Credit Suisse, because there simply aren't any banks in Germany big enough to you know, subsume Deutsche Bank into their ranks. They are the biggest bank in Germany. And if it were to go to an outside of German bank bailout or rescue package, that would be incredibly difficult from a legal and a getting it across the line point of view. So the Deutsche Bank one could be a real killer. So yeah, it seems to be there's a chain reaction has been set in motion here. There's a lot of warnings being fired out at the moment not to have too much money in the bank. If you're fortunate enough to have a lump sum sitting there that's higher than the government's investors compensation scheme guaranteed pledge, I think it's about £85,000 in the UK. Even that's not guaranteed, but if you're over and above that, you should certainly be looking at spreading capital around between banks or removing it and buying maybe precious metals or holding cash in a safe place to cover any collapses and unavailability of branches or ATM cash, etc., etc. So I think we're being primed certainly to brace ourselves for more turbulence.
Yes, I agree. Nonetheless, the Bank of England Governor Andrew Bailey is downplaying the chances of imminent financial crisis, according to the Financial Times yesterday. Let me just read some of this because it's quite remarkable how this man, like most, if not all, central bankers, outright lies. It's not as if he is detached from reality. He knows what's going on and he's lying like so many in his position do. The governor of the Bank of England has downplayed the prospect of an imminent financial crisis, describing last week's dumping of European banks' shares as investors, quote, testing out, unquote, lenders and insisting the world is not, quote, at all in the place, unquote, it was before the 2008 crash. Appearing before the Cross-Party Treasury Select Committee on Tuesday, Andrew Bailey said officials were being, quote, very vigilant, unquote, about market conditions. They were also considering tightening some rules following Credit Suisse's implosion and the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank, described by Bailey as, quote, the fastest passage from health to death since Barings, unquote. Mm-hmm. But Bailey insisted that the UK banking sector remained, quote, very strong, unquote, and that the issues that afflicted both SVB and Credit Suisse were idiosyncratic ones that should not imperil the wider global financial system. Quote, what we saw at the tail end of last week, I think there are moves in markets to test out firms, unquote, Bailey said, referring to a wave of selling that erased 8.5% of Deutsche Bank's market cap on Friday and wiped 3.8% off the wider Europe's stock 600 banks index. So we're seeing implosion before our very eyes, but we're being lied to by people like Bailey once again in an attempt to make us not believe what we're seeing right in front of us.
Yeah, well, when you think about what he said, he doesn't, well, I don't think he has any option but to lie. And of course, that sounds like a ridiculous statement for me to make. Of course, he should tell the truth and tell us what's really happening. But let's face it, Jesse, given that he's lying to the people and there's still a huge run happening on Deutsche Bank, for example, if he were to tell the truth about it, literally, he would hasten its demise. He would be making a bad situation infinitely worse. So sometimes the say, you know, what you don't know doesn't hurt you. I think that's the mentality that he's adopting here to avoid a full-scale run on that bank. And even Biden has been coming out and saying the same thing. You know, he's been pressed on, should we be concerned about the banking sector? Should we be concerned about American banks? His response being, it's all taken care of. Now, I think we're over the worst of it. So you're never going to get a truthful answer from a banker, and you sure as hell aren't going to get a truthful answer from a politician. So as usual, just invert what they say to get a picture of reality. So if the Bank of England governor and the president of the US are coming out saying this is all under control, you can bet your life it's not. But it's to avoid even further panic. Only a brave person would be keeping cash in Deutsche Bank at this point in time. And I think even the best attempts to stay stifle that or to disguise that imminent collapse there or imminent doom is going to be difficult to contain. There will be a huge run on that bank.
You're absolutely right when you say they have no choice but to speak this way to the public.
Yeah.
And this is what they always do. This is what they did in 2008. It's what they're doing now. It's what they did during the early days of the non-pandemic. It's just par for the course. But eventually, they're not going to be in a position where they're able to say that anymore. And the vast majority of people believe them. If that's even the case now, I'm not so sure that the vast majority of people listen to these statements and believe them, but it's hard to gauge. It's hard to gauge.
Yeah.
But what does that say that these people continue to do this and things continue to get worse? I suppose it says a lot of things, but I'm curious what your thoughts are on that.
Well, when you have a disastrous leader in an organization at a particularly disastrous time, sometimes to try and remove that leader and to try and replace them with somebody else, actually, it's like pulling sometimes when you have a cut, if you get a cut in your body and the blood clots or coagulates on the surface, you stop bleeding. If you were to try and remove the clot to change the dressing, it'll start bleeding on you again. In the meantime, you have to put the new dressing on it. I think what they're doing is they're keeping people in situ at the minute, because to be quite frank, when you listen to somebody like Yellen, when you listen to somebody like Rishi Sunak, who was our chancellor, and now you have Jeremy Hunt, these people have no idea how to manage a banking institution or financial sector in a positive way. They're good at manipulating it to meet their own needs, and to hell with everybody else. Then when the crisis actually comes, they literally have no idea what they're doing. And to be honest, it would make them lose even more face to be pulling out chancellors right now. If Yellen was to get the boot, somebody else was to be brought in to say, well, that person was never really competent in the first place. It's just a real mess. I would say we're entering into a death spiral financially here right now. With the potential, and I talked about this as well, the telegraphed collapse of the dollar that we saw through the week, actually, on CNN and Fox. They were both running 5-minute pieces with experts on the potential collapse of the dollar that could be triggered by Saudi oil being paid for in other currencies other than the dollar. That could be the trigger. They mentioned CBDCs. So to me, people are getting prepped, and people are getting primed for the inevitable. And all they've been doing is kicking this can down the road, Jesse, really, since 2008. And to give the globalists their due, they've done a damn good job to drag this out for, 15 odd years. That takes some manipulation of the media and some manipulation of the world stage to keep printing money the way they've done. And really, they've went to town in the last few years, particularly, and it's getting near the time that the piper needs to be paid. And unfortunately, when that happens, everybody's going to suffer in some way, shape, or form.
And they're back to the money printing again. Yeah. even as they continue to tighten rates. So they're raising rates. We had the Fed go up 25 basis points, and then that was followed shortly thereafter by the Bank of England. It went up 25 basis points as well. So you're devaluing treasuries and non-government securities, continuing to devalue them in doing so, but printing money at the same time, which is, I would argue, the root cause of inflation. I don't think many people who are familiar with economics, even on a basic level, would dispute that. So their damage operation is two-pronged, perhaps as it's always been. And yet we get these calls, for example, like the one coming from Sam Woods, who is the head of the Bank of England's supervisory arm. At the same hearing that Bailey spoke, he joined international calls for a tightening of liquidity rules designed to make sure banks have enough cash to meet likely requests from depositors. This again coming from the Financial Times. And the Financial Times reports that Credit Suisse was already governed by global rules designed to ensure banks have enough liquidity to cover 30 days of high outflows. Looking at the front page of the Wall Street Journal, the digital version, there's a piece from today, White House to call for new bank rules after SVB signature failures. The recommendations are expected to call for new rules from the Federal Reserve and other agencies, including for banks with $100 billion to $250 billion in assets. This is what was done in the wake of the 2008 financial crisis. There was tightening on liquidity rules, but obviously it made no difference. And they're doing the same thing again, expecting, well, I don't know if they expect a different result. So I don't know if we can call this insanity. I think this is, again, calculated. This is engineered. They can't control everything, but they're trying to control as much as they can. But what say you to that?
Well, they'll be using this, like, you know, what, who once said, never let a good crisis go to waste. I'm not sure who the original author of that quote was, but it holds true. You know, this is a crisis at the minute. And if you and I were globalists and we were sitting together in a bunker somewhere plotting how we could further our own ends and oppress society further, we would be looking at this as an opportunity to do what? An opportunity to maybe further our own ends financially and to gain more control over people, which is what they will ultimately do. Because like I said, some of these messages that we're getting out on the mainstream now are talking about central bank digital currencies. And of course, when they come in, ultimately the worst manifestation of those will be ones that are programmable, linked to potentially a social credit score. They'll only be accessible if you have a digital ID. So anybody out there at the minute, obviously we're concerned about this and we're voicing our concerns and we're trying to put people in the picture as to what's happening. But other people out there are seeing this as a great opportunity to tighten the screws down on us even further from a control perspective. And you mentioned interest rate rises, and you mentioned inflation there as well. And if I can just reference Fabio Vici, Fabio has a great saying, actually, that things are so bad inflation-wise at the minute that any interest rate levels at all are simply tickling the feet of the inflation monster. So if you can imagine the abominable snowman or King Kong, it's like some little kid sitting there tickling his foot with a feather. It does nothing at all. It doesn't affect the monster at all. And the inflation monster is something else that's been telegraphed on these news pieces on Fox and CNN this week. They're talking about hyperinflation like America has never seen before. So they can increase interest rates all they like. It has no effect on inflation. And in fact, it makes a bad situation worse because it puts the squeeze on homeowners or people with credit even further, which reduces their monthly income even more, which puts them into a more dire financial situation. So nasty, nasty setup. But again, there's a lot of people out there looking to maximize on it. And if I can read you one other quote that Fabio said, actually I wrote this down a year ago, the first time I ever spoke to him. This is a perfect summary of what we're seeing now, what we have been seeing for the last few years, and what we're going to be seeing over the next few years. So what he says was, further oppressive socioeconomic policies. Okay, what do they need? They need an implosive socioeconomic system sustained by financial leverage of the current magnitude. This requires a continuous stream of emergencies and also a villain to blame. There has to be a culprit. There has to be a reason to keep the printing presses going. This creates credible actors on the global stage with, as an audience, willing to be shocked by cynical media propaganda. So we saw it with COVID 3 years ago. Then we saw it last year with Zelensky and Ukraine. We're going to be seeing more of it this year with the same old actors, the same old things. Climate change is being introduced. These are constant emergencies. They're constant actors on the world stage, and it allows justification for the printing presses to keep going, just to keep everybody on an even keel. It's a very, very good summary of what we're seeing at the moment and why we've been seeing it for the last 3 years.
Yes, and it seems there are emergencies everywhere. Mm-hmm. Every day there's something new, but we have the big ones, the sustained ones that have been there for years now. So we have the COVID-19 operation. We have the war in Ukraine, which has been just over a year, although what's happening now is the latest iteration of a war that's been going on for much longer than just over a year. So I look at those as the primary emergencies from which other emergencies can be derived or contrived. And yep. I think we're seeing that with regard to the COVID operation. We're seeing that with increasing hysteria about so-called avian flu. And with the war in Ukraine, we're seeing that with increasing hysteria about a potential U.S. war with China. And I have no doubt that attempts will be made to manufacture emergencies out of these. I don't think they will be real emergencies when you get down to brass tacks, just like COVID was never a real emergency. It doesn't exist, for one yeah. thing, but the emergency was concocted and it certainly exists now. Mm-hmm. So I have no doubt that those are going to continue, and they'll continue to give birth as long as those in power need it to happen. They'll continue to give birth to smaller related emergencies. And I'm not saying that bad things aren't happening and aren't affecting people in very negative ways. They certainly are, but these are not organic happenings. These are not acts of God. These are being driven into existence and perpetuated for certain ends. And the ultimate end is control. And one of the ultimate ends of control is, or ultimate means of control, also an end, is central bank digital currency, which you've been referencing. And I see what's happening with the banking crisis as a concerted push to get us to adopt central bank digital currencies. I don't think there will be just one. I think there will be multiple around the world, and the interoperability, which we hear a lot about, will be key. But if you look in the West, if you look in the East, if you look at the US, if you look at Russia, if you look at China, if you look at the EU, if you look at the UK, they're all pursuing central bank digital currency. And it's lockstep, just like it was with the rollout of the COVID-19 operation. So I want to get your thoughts on that for a few minutes before we throw it to break. And it's probably something we'll pick up on after the break, but for about 2 minutes, your thoughts on that.
Well, as you've referenced, this isn't something that's going to be localized to the US or the UK. You know, there's been trials and rollouts of digital currencies that have been going on for the last few years in various parts of the world. Some of them are in further along in development than others. Be under no illusion that, you know, it's not going to be a case, Jesse, that, say, for example, all the banks collapse this week, the dollar disappears this week, and then all of a sudden we have this new CBDC rolled out. It won't happen like that. It's not going to be a seamless transition. I think when I've been talking about de-dollarification of the world, which absolutely is going to happen. There's no two ways about it. The speed at which happens and exactly when it begins to go into serious decline, no one knows for sure, but it's getting closer. So as it's getting closer, I would hazard to say that many, many countries, like especially the US and the UK, they were really pushing it last summer. Rishi Sunak wanted to push out their version of Bitcoin, which was going to be called Britcoin, something obviously that the Bank of England would have very tight control over. And it's a daft name, but it's the sort of thing that will appeal to the average, you know, semi-conscious UK punter out there. I'm buying Britcoin. I'm buying Britcoin. So they are working on it. It's not where it needs to be right now. But as this continues to happen on the surface, no doubt they're beavering away behind the scenes, fine-tuning this with various programs and to implement it whenever the dollar and most currencies and banks go into palliative care, which probably isn't too far away. But yeah, if it's not on the streets today, be under no illusion, it's being worked at to be rolled out at any given time. They're just not publicizing it that much, telegraphing it a little bit, sowing the seeds, the concept, but they will be working feverishly to make sure it's ready if everything goes pear-shaped.
Absolutely. Let's throw it to a quick break and pick up on that and get into a bunch of other things when we come back. So everybody hang tight, and I will return momentarily with Rick Munn here on TNT Radio.
TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
This is hilarious. Insects have been touted from the World Economic Forum to the United Nations to CNN to governments around the world to the EU, which just approved cricket powders. And it's now coming. They're giving crickets to kids in school, in elementary school, as part of a psych-op. Well, guess what? Now the animal rights people are getting involved. They're demanding welfare standards for these bugs meant to save the planet from the human-caused climate crisis, because bugs have the capacity to feel pain and suffering. So you can imagine, why is it okay to eat a cow or an animal when bugs are the same thing? They're living creatures. How can we eat a living animal? And that's the question.
The Mark Morano Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
When the forgotten poor are suffering and in need of healing, they wait for a ship unlike any other. Mercy Ships, the largest floating civilian hospital in the world, with volunteer medical staff and crew who donate their time to save lives. Heroes of mercy, like these.
Every human being has the right to be treated as human, to have a place at the table of the human race.
If you could just see the look in the patient's eyes or the smiles that you get when lives have been changed, then it would make it all worth it.
We bring hope and healing to one person, but that person belongs to a family, and that family belongs to a community.
Together, these heroes of mercy and friends like you bring hope and healing to those who desperately need it.
Thank you!
Thank you!
To learn more about Heroes of Mercy, go to mercyships.org today.
A cashless society means zero cash. No car boot sales, no markets, no tooth fairy or piggy banks, no saving cash for a rainy day, no buying anything with privacy. Digital currency means every cent you receive will be recorded and every transaction tracked. Lighting the fuse for freedom, TNT Radio.
Welcome back to Perspective here on TNT Radio, where we are live 24/7. Before I get back into it with my good friend and colleague, Rick Munn, just a quick PSA. This April 11th marks the four-year anniversary of the arrest of journalist and publisher Julian Assange. On that day, this year, activists and supporters from around the country will be gathering from 4 to 6 p.m. at the Department of Justice on the corner of 10th and Pennsylvania in Washington, D.C., to demand the charges against him be dropped. What is happening to Julian Assange is happening to all of us. It's the criminalization of truth-telling and the criminalization of truth. the world is watching and the tide is turning. And we must always remember that journalism, telling the truth, and the truth itself are not crimes. All right, Rick, just to finish up on the CBDC point.
Yeah.
I don't know if you are aware of this, but on March 9th, which was the day before SVB officially, and I put officially in inverted commas, collapse, because that's essentially when it hit the news, but that was building for some time. On March 9th, Jerome Powell, who is the Fed chair, was before a congressional committee telling them that a wholesale CBDC, not necessarily a retail one, but a wholesale CBDC could be rolled out, implemented without congressional approval. And nobody, to my knowledge, on that panel flinched at that. So that's quite remarkable in and of itself. And when you combine that with bulletins that have been coming out from the Bank for International Settlements talking about the need to regulate, contain, or even outright ban cryptocurrency and replace it with central bank digital currency, we can see very clearly what's in the cards. Not that anybody who's awake needs to be reminded, but we can see now the institutions who will be responsible for forcing this on us being very open about saying it's coming and we're not going to need congressional approval or the people's approval. We don't care about that to do it. And we are going to do this. And I don't know what we can do as individuals to resist this, to fight this, to circumvent it. But I'd like to get your take on that.
There's a lot in that. And just as you were talking, you know, a lot of things springing to mind. The first thing is saying that this can be pushed through without approval. Does that not sound like the emergency use authorization exemption for the COVID vaccines? It bypassed all regulation. It bypassed all testing. It bypassed everything. Because why? Emergency. Okay, so if this is pushed through without any congressional approval, it will be in the case of an emergency. So it will be to protect people, to protect the economy, to protect your savings, to protect your future, to protect your kids' future. And they'll wang it out there like they did with the COVID vaccines. And there's an old saying that I like to reference a lot on my show at the minute is, it's easier to ask for forgiveness than it is to ask for permission. So sometimes if you're waiting around for the green light to do something, just go ahead and do it anyway. And if you get into trouble, just say, look, I'm sorry. Maybe I jumped the gun a little bit there, but you get the job done anyway. So that's effectively what you're also seeing at the minute with various newscasters, media outlets, pharmaceutical companies, politicians and doctors. They're backpedaling furiously now that the full force of their lies is being felt among the general population. They're saying, listen, it was an emergency. We were doing the best we could at the time. We just pushed ahead with this anyway. We were relying on government figures. So now they're begging for forgiveness. They're not begging for forgiveness. Some of them aren't even asking for forgiveness, but they're backpedaling furiously. So yes, if this comes in, Jesse, don't expect it to go to a vote. Don't expect there to be a referendum on it. And even if there is, don't expect it to be honored, okay? And without being overly negative here, you know, you asked the question, you sounded a little bit exasperated, like, what can we do? What can we do? I'm sorry to tell you this and everybody else, and I'm speaking to myself here too, there's damn all we can do about it unless an enough people, a critical mass of people resist it. And based on what I have seen over the last 3 years now, I'm counting with regards to support for Ukraine, funding military operations in other countries, locking themselves down, injecting themselves, and so on and so forth, it doesn't bode well for a massive resistance wave if it comes to changing our currency. That's my opinion on it. So, yeah, unless there's some serious rethinking being done by the masses, I don't think there's anything at all we can do to stop this. You and I can use cash till we're blue in the face. We can resist it as much as we want. But unless we have the numbers, Jesse, it ain't going to make a bit of difference.
And cash is still a tool of the very same system, even though it has advantages over digital currency or using a credit card or a debit card. It's still a fiat currency that is a product of the same system. And but getting away from the system...
Yeah, yes, you can't control someone with, I mean, if I have $10,000 in my pocket and you have $10,000 in the bank with a debit card, I can transact anonymously wherever I want, keep it where I want. It will be untraceable. You, on the other hand, will be fully traceable. There'll be an electronic record of what you spent, where you spent it, what date you spent it on, what you actually bought. You'll be able to be traced. Okay. So although, yes, cash is still a fiat currency and it's still part of this whole system, at least it affords us a little bit of anonymity and a little bit more control over what we do than if we were transacting cashless. And just to give you an example of how I think we're going to be pushed more towards getting rid of doing away with cash transactions, my bank, unknown to me, implemented a scheme at the start of this year that I'll get cash back now every month for using my debit card. Now, I didn't ask for this. They didn't announce that they were putting it into place. They just announced that it was there and that there would be money being paid into my account this month. It was about $12 or something like that for whatever I transacted using a debit card in February. But, you know, that's an incentive. Why are they now paying me money that I didn't ask to be paid and they didn't tell me they were going to do? They're now paying me money to incentivize me to use cash less. So if they want me to use less cash, that's a pretty damn good sign that I should be using more cash. You get me?
Yeah. 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 I've seen a lot of that from various banks happening to various people and other things too, like people being, I can't verify this, I've only seen it online, but apparently people being debanked out of nowhere by their banks because of various reasons, including apparently their political stances and what they've expressed politically online on social media. And the matrix, if you want to call it that, the panopticon, whatever you want to call it, is expanding. And in terms of banking, they're going right for the heart of assets at this point. They're going after, they're going right at liquidity, right? And they're driving people. They're driving people into larger commercial banks like Bank of America and Wells Fargo. A lot of people are fleeing SVB-sized banks and going to these larger banks, further centralizing the system. But these banks have even more exposure to the same risk that SVB was exposed to than SVB did. And it's just a matter of time before these banks, and we're seeing some of them like Credit Suisse and Deutsche Bank, be put to the wall. And it's just a matter of time before it's, look, even Chase, even Wells Fargo, they're not safe. There's too much exposure to risk. What can we do to buffer you from that risk? Here's this central bank digital currency, which removes all the problems with liquidity risk, et cetera. And it's very obvious that's what they're gunning for. And they don't even try to hide it. And I think that
they're done trying to hide a lot of what they're doing. They're really just going for it in the open and letting us see it. And by extension, saying to us, well, what are you going to do about it? And in France, we can see what people are trying to do about it. I think there are a lot of lessons we can learn from what the French are doing, but even there, what gains are being made? You're seeing people being beaten by militarized goons in the street.
Yeah.
And Macron saying, I don't care what you have to say. We're going to force this new law through regardless. And it's not just about that pension law. It's the people of France, like the people of the world, are fed up with what's been happening for definitely the last 3 years, but longer than that. And so, yeah, getting back to my exasperation as to what we can do, I think there are a lot of templates, but I'm not convinced that they'll work in any substantial way.
Yeah, I'm looking at that. Just based picking up on some of the other points that you've made there, I'm actually looking at the chat on TNTradio.live. That's just second nature for me now. I do it every morning. So there's quite a few people listening to what we're saying here at the minute. And one chap, Anto, who actually lives in Northern Ireland, he's a countryman of mine. He says, my bank has just upped my credit card limit by an extra £2,000 without me asking. Yes, they will do that. They want to get you or entice you to get into debt. And then when you are in debt, they want to get you far into debt so you will be perpetually tied to them and effectively enslaved by them down the line. And Holly says, conversely to that, she said, I don't have a credit card, but my bank is trying to get me to lower my overdraft from an available £3,000 just down to £500 because I'm a bad customer as I don't have any debt. So that's the way banks work, Jesse. And again, if you were to go into, and if I want to move money from one of my bank accounts to another now, I have to explain why. I cannot proceed with the transaction unless I give an explanation of why I'm doing it. Is it to pay a bill? Is it to gift somebody something? Is it to make a purchase? Is it to move it between accounts? Is it to send it overseas? I cannot proceed with the transaction unless I tell the bank what I'm doing it for. Now, I can make up an answer, but I still have to give an answer. And if people are going in on branches now in the UK and they want to withdraw anything up to, say, £1,000 or more, they're being questioned at the counter. And if people turn around and say, well, it's none of your business, Jesse, what I do with my money, it's my money. You can turn around at that stage and say, well, Mr. Munn, for your own protection, I am not proceeding with this transaction. I think you might be under duress. You might be being conned. And until you can give me a good reason, I'm afraid I can't proceed with that transaction. Mm-hmm. And it's for your good and it's for your safety. They have got us by the short and curlies, my friend, these banks. And that's why holding a lot of wedge in there at the moment, especially at this time, is not a good idea.
Right. And just the last thing I'll say about that, because I want to change gears slightly, is if you use, once a month I use Venmo to send rent, and it always asks for a description of what the payment is for. And you can't leave it blank. And I just put a dash in there to keep it as anonymous as I possibly can. Since I can't leave it blank, I'll put a dash, because why the hell do you need to know what I'm spending it on? Well, I know why, obviously, but it's amazing to see that when I open up Venmo that one time each month, there's a feed of people I know and the payments they've made. I keep mine private so it doesn't show up in that feed, but people are like so open about what they're spending on, and they'll compliment their descriptions with emojis, like two wine glasses toasting one another. And it's, they don't seem to understand that that's being data mined, and their Correct. Behavior and where they're enacting that behavior is being mined, it's being monitored, and it's going to be used against them. sooner rather than later. It's dispiriting. And if there were, in my circumstances, a way to not use Venmo, I would. But again, this system is so... The system is so total that...
Yes, go ahead. You can't get around it. And say, for example, say I'm on an online bank because I don't want to go into their branch and do this. Why should I go down into town and stand in queue when there's two people on the till with 1,500 people standing queuing in front of me? If I refuse to give a reason, like they're asking you on this Venmo to give a reason, even if you put a dash, if I refuse and say, well, I'm going to phone it anyway, or I'll phone instead and get them to, they'll question me on the phone and they will not proceed. And even if you protest and you kick up a stink, it's my money, I can do what I want, I don't have to give an answer to you, they'll let you finish speaking, Jesse, they'll let you blow your load, and then at the end of it they'll say, but Mr. Zurawell, it's for your own protection, and I'm not sure that I can be certain that you're not under duress here, so I have got my rules to follow, so I'm going to put a pause on this until you can give me a valid reason, and you can get as upset as you like, and you can scream and shout all you like, and write letters of complaints all you like, they've got you. So yeah. While we're still meshed together with the banking system, be prepared to be shafted royally by the banking system progressively more in the days and weeks and months and years that lie ahead. How's that for a bit of good news?
Yeah, great. And just to cap that, I'm not involved in any cryptocurrency. I don't advocate for any of it. I also don't know enough about it to speak to the decentralized versions of it, but I just want to put that out there that I'm not saying that that's decentralized versions of it, but I just want to put that out there that I'm not saying that that's a solution either, but also that I don't know enough to say one way or the other. I will say that I'm very wary about it, and if people are going to go that route, definitely do your homework. Changing gears, but still staying within the emergency paradigm, I suppose. What's going on with the migrant crisis / invasion in the UK? This is something you and I have talked about at length in the past, and I know it's still continuing, but where do things stand now?
It's going from bad to worse. I mean, it's getting to the point now where the hotel bills on an annual basis are pushing up to 3.5 billion estimated in the UK. Other solutions are being proposed. They're now using disused army camps or RAF bases, potentially. Not even disused one. They're moving service personnel out of some places to make room for migrants that are coming in across the channel. I'll name one place in particular, and this is something I'm going to be covering off because this story's developing in real time as we speak. But there's an RAF base in England in a place called Scampton. And I don't know if you've ever heard of or seen the movie The Dam Busters. A famous squadron of the RAF went into Germany and blew up strategic dams back in the Second World War in May 1943. But they actually flew out of RAF Brampton, I believe, on the 16th to 17th of May. So 80 years later, without any identification, no idea of Scampton's history or loyalty to Britain, who may be soon billeted there while the wokes play their violins. This is a picture of the RAF. If you could see this, it's a picture from 1943 of the RAF squadrons, and now a picture beside it of a load of migrants wearing face masks and mobile phones as they pile into this famous RAF base. So this is obviously stirring a lot of people up, riling a lot of people. The council in the area is seeking a desperate High Court injunction to stop the Dam Busters HQ, RAF Scampton, being turned into yet another illegal migrant holding camp. And lastly on this one, there's the Red Arrows. There's a very famous flight squadron in the UK, like the cream of the crop pilots, stunt pilots called Red Arrows. There's a picture of one of those planes on the back of a large flatbed lorry being driven away from RAF Scampton today as the Immigration Minister, Robert Jenrick, is expected to confirm around 3,000 mostly male illegal immigrants will be transferred from hotels into RAF bases. So if that's not rubbing salt in the wounds and provoking the population, I don't know what is. It's like moving a group of moving a Mexican drug cartel into the Alamo. It's something akin to that, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, I'm put in mind of what John Looney remarked. I don't know when exactly he said this, but he was talking about how he has word or even evidence, although I haven't seen this, I haven't been able to confirm it, that these are men who are being recruited to essentially become mercenaries in terms of controlling the population of the UK, in terms of keeping people in 15-minute cities like Oxford, or 15-minute gulags is better put. And when I think of that, again, I can't confirm that, but when I think of that as a possibility, and now that these men, some of them have been deployed, I suppose you could say, to a Royal Air Force base, whether it's in use or not being used, there's a connection, however tenuous it might be, between the what John O'Looney said and the militarization actually happening of these men. How do we know there's not going to be some sort of training that goes on of these men, right? Are they just going to be put there and sit there to dwindle away? I don't know, but these are questions we should be asking.
This is obviously something that is brought up a lot. Is it an imported fighting force being brought into Britain? It could well be. It could well be. I was speaking with someone yesterday about the same thing, and irrespective if it ultimately turns into a fighting force, what we do know for sure is that they're being bussed or transported into barrack-style accommodation, RAF bases. And because of the amount of hotel rooms that are being taken up and guest houses, B&Bs, etc., they're literally running out of places to put them. So they're proposing barrack-style mass accommodation for the tens of thousands of men that are piling into the country on an annual basis. It's a huge amount of people, Jesse. And, they haven't got the space to put them in anywhere. And they want to put them in somewhere that they have maximum, bang for their buck, as in the British taxpayers' money's going towards housing these people. So the answer is barrack-style accommodation. And if you've seen any American jails that are overcrowded, I watch a lot of documentaries on the American prison system. And, normally it's two men to a cell, but when things get a bit tight there, they change the sports hall in any major prison into like a dormitory. So you'll have like maybe 1,000 men bunking down in the dormitory because they simply don't have the space to keep them in general population. So that's kind of the point that we're getting at here in Britain. And if it does nothing else, it's polarizing a lot of people. And I don't know about you, but the world seems to be getting a very racist place right now. There's a lot of topics ultimately end up in race, people talking about race, people not happy about certain racist issues, reparations being paid today. We're told that the Guardian newspaper is going to pay £10 million because of their links with the slave trade. In San Francisco, this is going on. The whole business about migrations, it's a race issue. It's not a housing issue. Race, race, race. It's everywhere. And even the new First Minister of Scotland, he infamously made a speech a year or two ago where he stood up 19 times and condemned the amount of white people that were in positions of power and government in Scotland, even though Scotland is 96% white. And you would expect, pound for pound, most of the top positions to be white people, simply strictly on a demographical basis, but he turned it into a race issue. He's now been pictured saying prayers, breaking his Ramadan fast in Bute House as the first Muslim first minister of Scotland. Rishi Sunak is a Hindu prime minister, Leo Varadkar in the UK, and Sadiq Khan is lighting up Nelson's Column for Ramadan in London. I don't know if it's just culturally enriches or if it's an act of provocation, but it's certainly riling a lot of people up and ruffling a lot of feathers. And it goes the other way too. You know, the whites are allegedly responsible for everything these days, and you know, we've got white privilege and we should be ashamed of ourselves and so on and so forth. It seems to be building up to a bit of a climax when it comes to racism as well, which is not going to be pleasant whenever that one goes off.
Yes, and it's making a mockery of critically looking at history and what's been done to certain people. It's important to do that, but when it becomes these blanket calls that you just laid out as examples, it's ridiculous, and it shuts down people's critical thinking faculties or leads them to all sorts of mob acts, irrational mob acts, and just stupidity and fragmentation, which is exactly what those who want to control us want from us. So it's up to us to not take the bait, and it seems to be getting harder and harder to do that, but just don't take the goddamn bait. That's all I can say.
No.
Rick, thank you so much for joining me.
Any fish that takes the bait ends up on a hook, and then it ends up in the frying pan. Don't be that fish.
Exactly. Thank you so much, my friend. I look forward to speaking with you next time. Everybody, stay tuned for Joe Hoft up next here on TNT Radio.